Certainly glad you're here today to study again from God's Word. We invite you to take a Bible and to follow along with us, or to follow along on the charts behind, either one. But we're glad that you're here today and invite you back at every opportunity you might have to come be with us. What means the most to you in this life? For a lot of people this past week, it was politics. I was just surprised at how many flyers we received this year and how many robocalls we received. It seemed like up until 6 o'clock that evening, we were receiving robocalls concerning different candidates. So it seems like for a lot of people, that might mean what most to you in this life. For some, it might be the economy, about the fact you're trying to gather up as much as you can for retirement, maybe to move to a vacation home, maybe to go on that dream vacation. And maybe that means the most to you in this life. It might be sports. A lot of people, they love sports. They almost live and die by sports, some folks do. And that might mean a lot to you in this life. I know family dominates our life quite a bit. And that might mean a great deal to you. In fact, to some people, that might be the most in this life to them. But as we look at this today, I want to tell you that the thing that you should value the most is your faith. Your faith. Some people argue and they say, well, you should value Jesus more than your faith, and I won't argue with that. But Jesus doesn't mean anything at all to a person that does not have faith. In fact, faith is our connection with Jesus. It is our link with God. We see in Ephesians chapter 2 and in verse 8 it says, "For by grace you have been saved through faith, and that not of yourselves, it is the gift of God." And what we see here in this verse is God's part and man's part. We see God's part by grace. You have been saved through faith. And that's my part. That's your part. When faith expresses itself in baptism, faith saves. We see in Mark 16 and in verse 16, he who believes and is baptized will be saved, but he who does not believe will be condemned. But you must understand that faith has to go further than that. We see that baptism is but an initial act of faith. And salvation is but an initial blessing. But faith changes a person. It should change their whole perspective. In Hebrews, in chapter 11. Hebrews chapter 11. We'll look at a couple of verses here. Go ahead and just put them up for you. Hebrews chapter 11 and in verse 1. It says, "Now faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen." You see, a person of faith can see things that other people cannot see. We look at Numbers 24. This is about Balaam. In Numbers 24, in verse 3 and 4 concerning Balaam, it says, he took up his discourse and said, the oracle of Balaam, the son of Beor, the oracle of the man whose eye is opened, the oracle of him who hears the words of God, who sees the vision of the Almighty, falling down yet his eyes uncovered. The older version says that his eyes are open wide. His eyes are open wide. The idea is his eyes are open wide with faith. I have been thinking a lot of these passages this week, especially 2 Corinthians chapter 4. And in verse 8 through chapter 5 and in verse 10. This all flows together. Probably shouldn't have been a chapter division there. But in reading this, 2 Corinthians 5, or 2 Corinthians 4, verse 8 beginning, I want you to see that faith sees the value of truth. Faith sees the value of truth. In verse 8 of chapter 4, it says, we are afflicted in every way, but not crushed, perplexed, but not despairing, persecuted, but not forsaken, struck down, but not destroyed, always carrying about in our body the dying of Jesus, so that the life of Jesus may also be manifest in our body. For we who live are constantly being delivered over to death for Jesus' sake, so that the life of Jesus also may be manifest in our mortal flesh. He says in verse 12, so then death is working in us, but life in you. I think you started talking this morning. I was out of the class, but I was listening about the conversions in chapter 8 through chapter 11 in Acts, and about the fact of their faith, the faith of these apostles, the faith of those deacons, Stephen that you all talked about this morning, Philip, the faith that he had. And of course, as you go a little bit further, you'll talk about the Apostle Paul. I remember Festus said, as the Apostle Paul was preaching concerning the resurrection of Christ, Festus said, Paul, your learning is driving you mad. Your learning's driving you mad. So then, death is working in us, but life in you. He says in verse 13, since we have the same spirit of faith, and we'll talk about faith several times. Here he uses the term, the same spirit of faith. According to what is written, I believed, therefore I spoke. We also believe and therefore speak. As I was with Ronnie and Carol several times this week, and for those that don't know, Ronnie's condition has changed drastically. I went back home and started to put this lesson together about what faith sees. Yes, it sees the value of truth, but what else does faith see? Well, faith sees the inner man he talks about here. He says in chapter 4 and in verse 16, therefore we do not lose heart, even though our outer man is perishing, yet the inward man is being renewed day by day. I don't know how many really give thought to the inner man. I suppose throughout the world, there's not many people giving thought to the inner man. We'll take care of the outer man. We'll do whatever we can to make sure that we look good, to make sure that we live as long as we can concerning the outer man. But a person of faith sees the inner man. What else does he see in this chapter? Well, faith sees future glory. There are people right now, Isaiah's age, Wesley Jackson's age, maybe Colton's age back there, maybe even little Jackson back there, right now, that are preparing for the Olympics in maybe 2024 or 2028. What are they doing? It's all about that. It's all about that glory. They are disciplining themselves in what they eat. They are disciplining themselves in their school right now. They are going through discipline as far as their workout, about building up their body, and about everything else they're doing, because all they can see right now at 11 or 12 years old and a little bit younger and even in the back way younger than that, all they can see is that future glory. All they can see is that gold medal. What does Paul say? He says in verse 17 of chapter 4. He says, our light affliction, which is for a moment, is working for us a far more exceeding and eternal weight of glory. He's ready for that crown as well. But it's not an Olympic crown. He's awaiting a crown from God the Father and His Lord Jesus Christ, because He's willing to buffet His body. He's willing to discipline His body. He's willing to discipline so that that inner man receives glory. And we see here the glory is greater than affliction. What else do we see? In chapter 4, verse 18, we see that faith sees the value of unseen things. Faith sees the value of unseen things. In verse 18 it says, while we do not look at things which are seen, but the things which are not seen, for the things which are seen are temporary, but the things which are not seen are eternal. I was raised by older family members. When I was a kid growing up, we didn't listen to rock and roll records. We listened to maybe songs from the 40s, maybe the 50s. There's songs they used to play every now and then. I forgot who sang it, but it was entitled, "The Best Things in Life Are Free." The best things in life are free. Now the outer man says, well, that's not true. I tell you what, you don't know how much it costs for my house. You don't know how much it costs to remodel my house. You don't know how much it costs to do my lawn. You don't know how much it costs for me to go on vacation. You don't know how much it costs for this car. You don't know how much it costs for this or that. Maybe the places that we dine, they're certainly not free. What I'm talking about is truthfulness. A person that tells the truth, a person that teaches the truth, maybe to his children, grandchildren, a person that is a person of integrity, a person is a person that abides in love, has love in his heart for his fellow man, for his neighbor, and most importantly, for God. See, those are things that are free. You don't have to pay for. Because that's the type of person that inner man should be. So faith sees the value of unseen things. Faith sees a future spiritual body in chapter 5 and in verse 1. He says, for we know that our earthly house, this tent, is destroyed. We have a building from God, a house not made with hands, eternal in the heaven. This earthly house, this tent. I was listening to Peggy talk about Andy Horn back before church. Sick. Others that we know, sick. Dying. Because we understand that this earthly house, this tent, is destroyed. But we have a building from God, a house not made with hands, eternal in the heavens, the inner man. Because very soon, whatever situation we're in, very soon we're all going to have a real body. We think about this body being our real body. But this isn't our real body. Very soon we're going to have a real body. We're going to have a permanent body that cannot be destroyed. And we see that faith sees the value of pleasing God. He says in verse 9, therefore, we make it our aim, whether present or absent, to be well-pleasing to Him. Not just in baptism, but to be well-pleasing to Him throughout our life. Peter and the other apostles answered and said, we ought to obey God rather than man. We'll take you back to 2 Kings for just a minute. 2 Kings, Jason talked about Elijah last Sunday night. I had my idea, Jason, of who ought to have been taking a whirlwind to heaven, and it shouldn't have been Elijah to me. He just seemed like he was vacillating back and forth. You know, maybe Abraham, maybe Moses, somebody else. But Jason did a good job on Elisha. Kyle did a good job last Sunday morning. But here's the next prophet down, Elisha. Elisha in 2 Kings chapter 6. And in verse 8, just to set the plot for you, the king of Assyria, he can't understand why the Israelites are always a step ahead of him. So he's trying to figure this out. Why they keep on being a step ahead of him militarily. So with the background, here's the story now. Chapter 6, verse 8 through 17. It says, the king of Syria was warring against Israel, and he counseled with his servants, saying, in such and such a place shall be my camp. The men of God sent word to the king of Israel, saying, beware lest you pass through this place, for the Syrians are coming down here or there. The king of Israel sent to the place about which the man of God had told him. Thus he warned him, so that he guarded himself there more than once or twice. Now verse 11. Now the heart of the king of Syria was enraged over this saying, and he called his servants and said to them, will you tell me which of us is for the king of Israel? It got to be a spy here in the camp. They keep on figuring out what I want to do. What's going on here? Tell me. Well, verse 12, it says, one of his servants said, no, my lord, O king, but Elisha the prophet who is in Israel speaks the king of Israel the words that you speak in your bedroom. Well, you know, wow, that's even something else there. But it says in verse 13, so he said, go and see where he is, that I may send and take him. And it was told him, saying, behold, he is in Dothan. And he sent horses and chariots and a great army there. And they came by night and surrounded the city. So now the servant's going to see all these people. And he's going to try to figure out, what are we going to do? All these people, the king of Syria has us surrounded. So we pick up the reading again, verse 15. It says, now the attendant of the man of God had risen early and gone out. And behold, the army with horses and chariots was circling the city. And his servant said to him, alas, my master, what shall we do? Whole city surrounded. So he answered, do not fear, for those who are with us are more than those who are with them. And he's thinking to himself, it's just me and you, Elisha. And here we have this whole big group of an army around us. Verse 17, here's the end of the story. Then Elisha prayed and said, O Lord, I pray, open his eyes that he may see. And the Lord opened the servant's eyes, and he saw. And behold, the mountain was full of horses and chariots of fire all around Elisha. because he could see finally with eyes of faith. He could see with eyes of faith. This is what this sermon's about. About seeing. About seeing with eyes of faith. What does faith do? It produces peace. It produces peace in so many ways. Truth above life. You don't worry about your life. These apostles, they weren't worried about their life. They were preaching the truth. And as they preached the truth, remember Peter back at the fireside, he was saying, I swear by the God of heaven, I don't know this man Jesus Christ. But now he's changed. Now he's telling the truth. He speaks the truth. And as he speaks the truth, he can have peace with his conscience every night that he goes to bed. And the rest of the apostles could as well. What else does it do? It produces peace. The inner man above the outer. Even though the fact there's physical decline in a man or a woman's life, still I have peace with God. Because I can see through eyes of faith that this outer man is perishing, but this inner man is being renewed day by day. This future glory. Remember we talked about the Olympic athletes. This future glory above personal comfort. That I can have peace in persecution. People can ridicule me. People can make fun of me. That's fine. Unseen things above seen things. I can have peace with material loss. Because my confidence is in the unseen, not the seen. A spiritual body above a physical body. That I can have peace in the face of death. Because it's not the end. It's not the end. It's the beginning. It's the beginning. And pleasing God above men. I can have peace with God. Very quickly. Faith is declining in our world. In the pre-modern world, they accepted existence of, a lot of people believed a God, whatever God it was at that time. Even though their concept was flawed. And in the modern world today, most people believe God is dead. When they had this shooting the other night in California, and I know this, one mother, she was very upset that her son was killed. But this is going to be the poster child for a lot of people. Because she said, I don't want your prayers. I don't need your prayers. I don't care anything about prayers. And I know she was upset. But a lot of people are going to twist and turn that. To where praying doesn't do anything. And some people in the world believe that. In the U.S., some faith survives, but it is dying. Few lives are significantly affected by faith anymore. Disrespect for God and for His Word. They'll use God's name in vain all the time. You be anywhere. You can be on a college campus, be on a high school campus, you can be in a movie theater, you can be just walking down the street and you'll hear God's name used in vain. Laws are being made in violation with God's law. Schools are conditioning our youth to ignore God. And love for man is admired while love for God is disregarded. When faith declines, we're going to be more concerned about political correctness. When faith declines, we're going to be more concerned about physical sickness than that of spiritual sickness within our own lives, that of sin. When faith declines, we're more concerned for relieving the physical needs of others than relieving their spiritual needs. Questions will come about, what will religion do for me now? As a church, what will please people? And individually, how can I avoid getting caught? A couple of more passages here and we're through for the day. The world doesn't understand the peace that's possessed by Christians. In Philippians chapter 4, verse 7, the peace of God which surpasses all understanding will guard your hearts, your minds through Jesus Christ. Our faith, great or little? O woman, great is your faith, he says. And then he talks about those of little faith. Is it growing or failing? The apostles prayed, Lord, increase our faith. In Luke chapter 22, after the Lord's Supper, he says, Peter, I have prayed for you that your faith should not fail. And of course, peace with God, the most important. Verse 10, for we must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ, that each one may receive the things done in the body according to what he has done, whether it be good or whether it be bad. So we'd encourage you this morning to have eyes of faith, to look not so much at the outer, but to look at the inner, and to see what relationship we're in right now, and others as well, and help ourselves and help others as well. Whatever your need might be, come right now while together we stand and we sing.